Hi, welcome to This Is Your Book Club podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Jamie.
So good to be back.
Yes.
Good to have listeners. Thank you for listening.
We love you.
You guys are the best. We really do. We've been getting fan mail.
It's so fun. And I love calling it fan mail.
Right?
We've been reading through emails and it's just so fun.
Thank you. I know. And we'll read them another podcast because we just love them so much. You guys are the best. So yes. If you want to send us fan mail, please do so. We will read it.
Yes.
Anyway,
we love it. It's fun.
We do. It just makes my heart happy. You guys are awesome. But before we jump into this week's podcast, we need our fun fact.
Fun fact. So our book for this month is Home Before Dark by Riley Sager. And this week I listened to an interview he did with his editor, actually. It was a podcast episode interview with her. And she was asking him just different questions about Home Before Dark, specific to this book and the next book that he's working on. But in Home Before Dark, one of the ways he prepped for writing this book and one of the inspirations for this book was he read The Amityville Horror.
Ooh.
Which, have you ever read it?
No.
I haven't either.
Isn't it really scary?
That's what I've heard. And it's from 1978. So he even talked about, if you read it now, you wouldn't be as shocked or as scared because we're used to scary stories and scary movies now. But back in 1978, this was a new genre or a newer genre. And the idea of this was freakier back then. So he tried to place himself in 1978 while reading it. And
but that's
what he knew he wanted to write. A scary story about a haunted house, because he does thrillers, but he wanted this one to be a haunted house story. And so he went to the Amityville Horror and was like, this is where my inspiration is going to come from. This is what's going to rev me up. That was his prep for writing this book.
That is so cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of fun to go off of another book to prep you for writing your book.
Seriously. Now,
obviously, it's not a copycat of that or anything, just to get you in the
like
mood
the feeling
of scary.
Oh my goodness.
Like, what's scary?
Now I'm a little bit like, I mean, I read Lock Every Door.
Yeah.
Which is another Riley Sager. And I really liked it. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't one that like I was super scared. I was like afraid of shadows.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like I'm feeling like this sounds like it's more scared of shadows type book.
Well, and I was going to save this for next week, but maybe I can't because I need to just get it out of my mind so I don't think about it. The word on the street going around that the scariest part of this book, like the scariest scene that you're going to want to close the book, put it away for a little and come back.
Yes.
Has to do with snakes.
Ew.
And you know my thought about that.
I really don't like snakes.
I really, that right there is terrifying. Haunted house, whatever. Snakes? No.
I'm really...
So,
like, excited and nervous.
That's not a spoiler because he talked about it. And that's what everyone's talking about. Like, when you're reading reviews on this, is the snakes.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
I don't like snakes. They don't like come out of the toilet and bite your butt or anything.
Because that is a fear of mine.
It's mine too. Like, they could live in the pipes,
they could live anywhere. Oh. I was at a friend's house once. This is totally off subject. And she had a pet snake, and I knew that, which was always in a terrarium. But even knowing it was in the terrarium freaked me out. And it was in the basement. I had never seen it.
Okay.
But just the fact going to her house, knowing it was there, I was always on edge. And we're hanging out, we're talking, and then she had lots of different animals, birds, fish, dogs, cats. And we were talking about them, and then she was like, I haven't been able to find my snake. And I'm like, what? What? And she's like, oh, didn't I tell you? It's been missing for like a month. And I'm like, in your house? She's like, well, I don't know at this point. It's just like,
I gotta go.
I can't.
Oh my gosh. How do you sleep at night?
Don't know where your snake is. Except that's my fear. Even if it was in a terrarium, because my daughter wants a snake so bad. And she's like, I would keep it in a terrarium. But what? I couldn't sleep at night thinking
it might get out.
It got out and it's going to slither up my bed
Ooh.
And touch my leg.
Ew.
I can't. I can't. I'd never be able to
Ava
sleep.
Ava wants a snake.
She sends me pictures all the time.
But isn't she like a soft, furry she friend loves lover?
All animals. All animals.
But right they're not animals.
No. They're serpents.
Yes, exactly.
Right now, my kids are begging and putting together like cost spreadsheets on getting an axolotl.
What's an axolotl?
Do you know what an axolotl is?
No, I have never heard of such a thing.
It is a salamander. It's in the salamander family.
Okay.
But if you look up axolotl, it is very unique looking. Cute in kind of an ugly way. They're quite cute.
Ew,
but in a very ugly way.
What? It is not cute.
And
it looks like a dragon. It's a fish. It's,
they do call it a dragon, a water dragon. But yeah, it it's stays in the water. Yeah.
It looks like How to Train Your Dragon.
It does.
But a white version.
Yeah, they come in different colors. Anyway, another rabbit hole of mine.
Wow. Your kids are like, where do they learn about these things?
My kids all sorts of different animals. I bet your kids know what an axolotl is. How? It's kind of a thing right now.
Oh, I've never heard them mention it. I don't think I would dare bring it up.
Because then they might want one.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't know you could have one as a pet. I know. So.
Look this up. Maybe we'll post a picture. I'll post a picture.
Bennett likes to, my oldest son, take pictures of them. He has a friend who has one who sends pictures all the time. And then Bennett will draw on top of the axolotl and give it like cats and a monocle or just different
That's awesome.
Arms and stuff. So all this artwork is coming out of it that are pretty funny. Anyway, my
that is crazy.
This is the next
learn something
thing.
New.
Yeah,
when you listen always, to our podcast,
always an interesting animal wish in my house.
I love it. That's cool.
Anyway, okay,
I'll let you get that one.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's in the discussion phase.
Oh, so very good. Next week.
Yes.
Tune in. It's What's on Your Shelf.
I can't wait.
I know. I'm reading away.
Yep. Do you know?
Lots to talk about.
You don't know because I haven't told you this yet, but the last three books I've started, I've stopped and returned
what?
Them. I've never, rarely do I start a book and like say, yeah, no, this isn't it. But three in a row.
I did it for one this month and I never do it either.
I never do it. But so I'm kind of
now
thinking,
I really
like,
want to know what the books were.
Well, one of them, which was a book club book for my neighborhood book club in October, earlier,
yes.
Last in the fall sometime, Melmoth. It gets great reviews. Everyone loved it. It's me. It's obviously me. I'm not in the mood. And then another one was, I don't know. I returned them.
Right.
One of them was about yellow fever. It was America's plague. And I love that kind of stuff. So it's nonfiction, but it just wasn't. So it's not like I'm not going to go back to it. But yeah, Melmoth by Sarah Perry. And then the other one, it was something to do with rabbit something. I don't know.
Weird.
Anyway, just three in a row. And I was like, something's going on with me when I can't even stick with a book. So help me out. Not that I don't have the longest TBR.
Yeah.
But give me something you've read lately that's maybe lighthearted, funny.
Yeah.
Just a light read. I feel like maybe the others were just too heavy.
Oh,
and I've been in
okay.
some heavy things lately.
Did you get The Midnight Library yet?
I'm on the wait list still for it. How many weeks out am I?
So good.
I have so many right now that are not even like close to
being available.
Yeah.
So I recommended that one all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had friends now who've been able to listen or read and they've reached out to me and been like, gave it 5 stars.
Wow. I'm still 7 weeks out for that one.
So good.
Yeah. So what's on your shelf next week? And send us your recommendations. I obviously need.
We just want something that's like, can't put down, loved it. I want to rave about it.
Yes. Yes. Just catch me.
Yep.
Right away. Because I'm obviously in a funk.
Maybe I'm getting too picky. But I just want that.
Right. And I guess I just don't want, there's a lot of books out there. I don't want to spend my time with ones that I'm not, let's just
loving.
Move on. Yeah.
Yep. I totally agree.
And if I hung out longer with these books, maybe it would change. But I'm feeling impatient right now.
Yeah.
Maybe that's like
you want
the
something that's
dredge of winter.
Quick. Maybe that's it.
I just need a change of scenery, change of pace, change of a book.
Help us out. Yeah. Help us out.
Yeah. Okay. Come on.
I love it.
Okay, so for this episode today, we have a special treat for you listeners. We have Molly Fennig, who has written her second book, and she sent us a copy of it to read. And so we've read her book, and we are interviewing her this episode. So we've got her here with us. Sarah, why don't you read her bio for us, and then we will introduce you to her.
Yes. Okay. Here we go. Molly Fennig studied neuroscience at Swarthmore College and has published in the Blue Route Literary Magazine, The Blue Nib, the Running Wild Press Anthology, Havoc 2020 Anthology, and other literary presses, and multiple scientific journals. Molly currently works at the University of Minnesota in eating disorders treatment research and hopes to get her doctorate in clinical psychology. Outside of her passion for writing and mental health, Molly enjoys eating large quantities of chocolate and spending time with her mini golden doodle Peach. You can find out more about Molly at her website, mollyfennig.com, on Twitter at Molly Fennig, or on Facebook, Molly Fennig Author. Very cool.
So let's...
Without further ado...
Absolutely.
Let's bring her on.
Let's bring her on.
All right. Here's Molly. Molly, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Awesome. You wrote a book. You've written two books.
I have. I wrote one when I was in high school, and it's super angsty. And then I wrote one that just came out in November that I'm really proud of. I'm proud of both of them, but just the second one, it has a little bit less teenage angst, given my...
Okay.
What teenagers can say they wrote a book in high school? You were 17, right?
Exactly. So that's
pretty cool.
That is awesome. And so you, did we read this right? You self-published your first book, but this book, Starvation, your second book, you have a publisher. So you've gone down both roads.
Yeah. So I self-published my first book in high school. My English teacher actually had published, so she had connections for people who could help me format and things like that. And then this past book, I published through Immortal Works, who's based out of Salt Lake City.
I didn't either. That's cool.
Yeah. And so that's been a really great experience. Not only because I learned a lot from the first book, but because they're a great company. The people there are awesome and really great support for their authors.
So did you just send your book to them? Like, is that the process? You sent them the book and said, check it out. Are you interested? Like, how did that work?
Yeah. So a lot of publishers you need an agent for. Immortal Works is a smaller publisher, and they do take unagented submissions, and read it over and decided it was something they wanted to publish. So.
Very cool. Were you all done? Like, was your book like ready to go when you sent it in, or did they like work with you through the process?
Well, I think with books, are they ever really done? It was definitely a finished manuscript, but we also did go through a number of rounds of edits. And my editor was awesome, catching little things that I wouldn't have thought of, and also just making sure that I was really confident in the product, which is something I didn't have with the first book. So really feeling like is my best work. It was really well edited. And it was kind of the best it could be to be published.
So were there any things that your editor wanted you to change that you were like, no, this has to be this way. I'm adamant about this. Or are there things you had to give up that you didn't want to?
I think overall, we really aligned well, which is important in a publisher that I wouldn't have known going into it. Mm-hmm. But I remember one thing, they didn't want me to use God as like a swear word, or not a swear word, but like, oh my God.
Okay.
And I remember that being something that we had talked about. So they're more of a religious publisher and they do a lot of clean fiction. So that was one of their stipulations. So all in all, I changed it. I was fine with it, but it was something I wasn't expecting and something that we definitely had to talk about.
Seems like a little thing.
Welcome to Utah.
Yeah.
There are, I think that is surprising. Sometimes those little things that will come up when you're dealing with a clean, you know,
company like that. But yeah, that's surprising to me too. I didn't realize
that. Yeah, I wouldn't think something small like that would, because who does like that? You hear that all the time, I guess I would say.
Yeah, it's a very common phrase.
Yes.
And so I've even had, as a teacher, I've had kids, you know, say it in the classroom, and they say a lot of other things too, but I've had to say, hey, we got to put our filter on. We're at school right now and we can't say, you know, and they're like, that's a swear word, you know? So that's a common one that they don't even realize that it wouldn't be appropriate in every setting. But I mean, that is one that was kind of more on the cusp of, I would rather they say that than some of the other things. I'll choose my battles with that one. But that's interesting.
That is really interesting.
Yeah. I had never.
I love hearing like all the different, you know, ways that it seems like everyone has such a unique experience with the publishing process. Mm-hmm. And I find it so fascinating.
And the give and take. So comparing that to self-publishing, you said this one gave you a lot more confidence. You had people that were working with you and doing it. Tell us about the self-publishing route.
Yeah. So I had hired somebody to do my formatting, my editing, and the book cover. I think the book cover I'm super happy with. It turned out awesome.
So you pay independently for all of that stuff, where with a publisher, that's just covered underneath your contract?
Yeah. So usually with a publisher, they will cover those expenses, the publishing costs. Some don't cover marketing, but they'll cover other costs. And then you get a portion of royalties, and then sometimes you get more after you've covered those publishing costs. So I had to pay out of pocket for those things in self-publishing. And I think the editing wasn't the editor and I didn't click in terms of style as much as my editor now. So that's why I think I was less confident, just because we had different visions, which doesn't mean she's not a great editor. Just, and
better with you than others. That's a,
yeah, for sure.
Exactly. And then in terms of, I think the biggest difference has been the marketing and the publishing itself, like after writing the book, which is kind of shocking to me. But I have a lot of support in terms of, you know, there are other authors at the publisher who are also doing marketing stuff, and we can cross promote or things like that that you don't get when you're on your own. And then we have like workshops on marketing, and it feels like I don't need to know everything, which is a really nice place to be at.
Sure.
We talked about another author once, and I don't even remember who it was, but when I was reading her bio, and she mentioned that I'm a writer. I'm a really good writer. I am not a good.
Yes.
All the other things you have to do to sell your book once you're done writing. And she's like, that's not my strong point. And yet as a writer, as a creative person, you have to.
Yeah, you're asked to do all these things.
Do all the business side of it. Mm-hmm. Which is not what you are professionally. So.
It might not be your forte. Speaking of that, like, is that what your main goal is to like be an author? Or is this something that you do like on the side while you pursue something else that you were really interested in? Because you clearly are very educated. You have your degrees. Like, what is your goals for yourself?
Yeah. And like in the book, we were reading your bio that says that you work with mental illness in the mental illness field and eating disorders. So your knowledge base, it comes through in your book.
Yeah. So I'm 22, so I don't have like a full career yet. And I don't need to. I am going back to school for a graduate degree, hopefully a PhD in clinical psych. So eventually wanting to be a therapist, maybe some things on top of that. But in working in eating disorders and mental health treatment, and I really see fiction as a way to kind of disseminate or spread information to the community about mental health, especially things that we don't hear a lot about, like boy eating disorders or male eating disorders, which is why I wanted to write the book. And so I kind of see those as kind of going hand in hand in a way, but also very separate.
Sure.
Right. So starvation is based on a boy who has an eating disorder, which honestly, I agree. I had never really given a thought to males in this area at all. It's always like, if I think of an eating disorder, I think of females. And so
specifically teenage females. Like, yeah, it was really interesting because when he, I mean, at one point, right, he enters a facility, which I thought was very interesting. Mm-hmm. And you kind of see a more, you look around and see all the people who are there, right? And how they are all a little bit different. I thought that was super interesting and definitely not something that ever crossed my mind. Like, you just do not think of males having eating disorders.
And I also think the mental illness conversation needs to be brought up more in the first place. All mental illnesses, we need to bring it to the forefront. We need to talk about it. We need to seek therapy. Anorexia, bulimia, eating disorders haven't really hit. Like, we're seeing light on depression, anxiety, suicide, you know, OCD, a lot of other disorders. We're not really seeing the light yet on eating disorders. That's still one that's buried a bit, I think. And so I think the more we can have characters have representation in books, movies, TV of this to bring attention to the point that other people can go, oh, I see.
And maybe like they just can to consider help. It, right?
Yeah.
Like, just if, I think if it's never considered when you see it for the first time in real life, it's shocking. But if you have a minute to consider it where there's no real people involved and you can digest it for a minute, then when you do face it in real life, it isn't so shocking.
Yeah, you're a little bit more ready for it. Because
the other thing that's particularly important with boys and men is that they tend to have what we call low health-seeking behavior. So they're less likely to go to the doctor, less likely to go to the therapist. So I think for them, it's especially important to know that this is like a serious issue. And that you need to get help for it, because a lot of them may tend to think it's something they can deal with themselves, which probably ties into societal ideals of masculinity and things like that. But also, and I don't touch on this in the book because that wasn't within the scope, but, you know, body dysmorphia in terms of muscles is a really big thing right now. And men thinking that they're not muscular enough and it becoming really problematic and an eating disorder.
Yeah. I mean, I've never associated, because in the male population, steroid use in athletes is huge. I've never associated that with an eating disorder, but it would go hand in hand, mm-hmm. that body dysmorphia, needing those bigger muscles, looking at food. Yet my brain has never put that with an eating disorder.
Yeah.
It's just
neither.
Totally something different. So really good point. And I hadn't thought either. Men don't go to the doctor. That's not, I know my husband went in for a physical just this week and the doctor was like, so why are you here? And he's like, because I haven't had a physical in 2 years. He's like, no, really, why are you here? He's like, just cause. And he's like, no, men just don't come cause. What's the issue? And he was like,
my husband. He hasn't gone.
Thought it would be a good idea to come and have things checked out. And yeah, so that's even the response he got from his own doctor. Mm-hmm. Was, why are you here? Not like, just
let's
because
get down to the issue.
Yeah. Where I go every year and my doctor knows me by name, you know, like for me, it's a relationship and I go that men would
so
not and not seek help. That's a whole nother level of having an eating disorder and not getting the help you need for it. So they probably struggle a lot more and quietly than.
So did you sit with this idea for a long time or was it like, you're like sparked as you learned about it in school, were you like, you know what, I'm going to write a story, and you just jumped on it. Like, how did this all come about?
Yeah. So I had a friend in high school. And I think the comparison was particularly striking because she was also a Molly. And she had an eating disorder. But I didn't know until she had recovered. We had, one of my friends was like, make sure that you don't talk about what you're eating at lunch. And that was kind of it. And for me, it was really striking that I didn't notice it because, you know, in media, you think eating disorder, super thin, like almost skeletal people. And like, how could you miss something like that? But then also this idea, like I couldn't wrap my head around how you'd have to feel in order to go that long without eating. And so that was kind of, I started looking into like documentaries, trying to figure out how does it feel? How do you get to the point where you don't eat? And after that, I really wanted to write an account that let the reader really feel what it's like and how you could actually feel those feelings rather than just like a textbook of hero statistics. But like, how do you get to that point where you're doing that and how does it feel? And it started off as a different book. It was more of like a sci-fi ebook, and then really realizing, no, I really want to focus on the eating disorder portion. And I think having it contemporary really makes that drives the issue home better than what it was initially.
Yeah, I can see that. But it made it very real. These were real people with this same issue.
I want to know how you picked your cover art. I love covers.
Me too.
I'm always so interested to hear. Like, did you get a say in your cover, or did they pick that for you? How does that work? Did you design it yourself?
Yeah. So Immortal Works had said, kind of send us a couple of covers you like, some symbols in your book, some main themes. So I had sent them a cover that had it was a cityscape on top, and then it was a different color cityscape on bottom. And I really like that idea of kind of, you know, a hidden portion of kind of the city or humanity. And then I had included one of the symbols is Wes, the protagonist, kind of wraps his fingers around his wrist to check and see if he's gained weight. So I'd included that, and they came back with this and said, here's your cover. And I was like, great. Awesome.
So okay. It was that easy.
That quick. Like, got it. This is it.
Wow. That's awesome. Weird. They nailed it.
Yeah. How long from start to finish to publish did it take you to write the book?
I would say probably 3.5-4 years. The writing itself took about a year. I was looking for publishers for a portion of time. I was taking a break and doing school for a portion of time. The editing and publishing process took some time. But yeah, I'd say overall probably 3 to 4 years.
Well, so from writing, you saying about a year, and then to actual publish, you've got another 2 to 3 years in there. That's a lot of time sitting with this thought and sitting with what's on the page here. And I love pointing that out, because I think there's a lot of people who don't realize how long it takes to have something done. So it kind of makes it a more realistic thing to be like, it's okay if it's not happening right now. These things take time.
And what an accomplishment.
A lot of work. It's right? Not just writing the book.
Like you, yeah. And to not give up on it, right? Like, I think after so much time, it would be really easy to step away and be like, never mind. But that is so cool. Like, what an accomplishment. Yeah. I think that's definitely something to be proud of.
I think it's easy when it's a concept you really believe in and find value in and really want to see out in the world. And I think that goes back to, you know, not writing to trends, but writing to things that really speak to you and that you're passionate about. Even if you can't stand to read your book because you've read it over so many times.
Sure. I'm sure you're like, enough, just be done.
That's true. Like, probably there's not one person who's read a book more than the author, right? That book.
Yeah.
That is cool.
I don't go back and listen to our podcast episodes. Once I'm done editing, I'm done. That's interesting. They don't reread it. How do you pick your names in your book? So it's Kayla. Girl, right?
And
I was making sure because sometimes in my head I come up with different pronunciations for names. So I wanted to make sure that I'm reading it as Kayla.
That's what I did too.
Yeah. So how do you come up with the names?
So two things. So I think a lot of writers use baby books, or online baby dictionary things, which I use. The other one that like I do
names or
like,
yeah,
books, that
ones.
Is so
okay.
Interesting.
I've never thought of that.
Yeah.
Huh. The other one that I do that I don't know if other people do, but I look at the credits of a movie. And I think
look at names on credits. That's interesting.
That's great for, especially for coming up with first and last names that go well together.
I know. That is a really good idea.
That is
great. So do you have like, plans to write another book, or is that something that is in the future and not like immediate?
Yeah, so yes and yes, I would say. I have half of a book written that was my English thesis, so I got an English minor. And so that half is done. And I don't know when the next half is going to happen, but it's been sitting there for a while. I'm hoping to get back to it pretty soon. But again, just finishing the book is the very first part of a very long process. So it would be a while, I would think, until the next one would come out.
Yours are standalone books, right? So like you can kind of go and not, you know, you finish your book and you can go in a different direction. And that's kind of exciting. Do you feel like this new idea is something totally different?
Yes and no. So I definitely know that my brand is young adult mental health fiction. So this next one deals with anxiety and panic attacks. And it's set in Spain, where I studied abroad. So that's a little bit different. But young adult mental health fiction stays consistent, and I think everything else pretty much changes.
Yeah, very cool. I like that.
In this book, the discussion of, because I have an anxiety disorder, and it's something that I deal with, and I've got two kids that deal with it as well. So we work on it a lot at our house. And when you explain the anxiety of having food in the stomach, like I've never had an eating disorder. It's not something, I mean, I feel like in the 90s, it was a big deal. We talked about it. We saw a lot of movies and TV or a lot of videos in junior high about it and high school, but I've never thought of it in that way or had it explained to me that way, that it's actually an anxiety response of having food in your stomach, which was like, to me, it was like, okay, I kind of get this now. I think that's a hard thing when you've never experienced mental illness, when you've never experienced an anxiety attack or, you know, any of these other disorders, it's hard to understand what the other person is going through. So the explanation of the eating disorder and anorexia as a form of an anxiety response really made sense to me. That really was like, I get it. Okay, I'm getting where this is coming from. So it was a great connection that I think will help readers understand if they haven't experienced it or if they're trying to understand somebody they know who's going through this. It really does explain a lot of that process, I think, or
maybe what they're feeling, you know, just their feelings. I think it's hard when you're in the middle of those feelings to explain it.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, that's why you go to therapy and that's why you go into inpatient care to figure out why. I think, you know, these patients that or like our protagonist, why he doesn't really know, he's learning through his recovery why he's doing all these things or why this is an issue and where what the real issue is underlying the eating disorder.
Yeah,
that's really interesting that you say that, because I didn't realize that that's how I framed it, but it makes sense. So I also have had anxiety disorders. So I definitely understand other mental illness in that context, but also my research interests in terms of grad school is really the anxiety components of eating disorders and how those overlap and how they differ. So that's really cool. I didn't even realize I did that.
Well,
I think it just makes sense with the flow of the story.
Yeah.
Like that just seconds. Right. The
right. There's underlying issues that surface in different ways. And one of those ways is an eating disorder, but it all comes down to mental health and getting the help we need for those underlying issues.
Mm-hmm.
I love that it's being brought to the light. So Absolutely. Fantastic. Are there any, I know in movies they call them Easter eggs and different authors call them different things, but are there little pieces of people in your life or situations that you've added in your books?
No, I know a lot of people say they, you know, picture the characters as maybe somebody that they know, things like that. I think obviously the initial idea coming from a friend of mine going through an eating disorder is probably the closest that there is. I, for the most part, tend to stay away from making them overtly similar in terms of, I don't think I'm making them similar. Of course, subconsciously, maybe they are. So maybe people who know me can let me know if I did do that. but overall, I don't think so.
Okay. Interesting. Some authors, you know, I've heard of like when they talk about a bookshelf in a room and what books are on the bookshelf, it's because my brother read all those books or, you know, we've read some different ones like and talked to different authors who throw in little things like that. So it's always fun to hear if they have or not. But
So outside of writing, you're going to school to get your PhD, which is amazing. What are some of the other favorite things that you like to do? What do you do to enjoy your time?
So I have a mini golden doodle Peach. She's a pandemic puppy, but I'd been planning on getting a puppy for a while. So I spend a lot of time playing with her. We cuddle a lot. She's the cutest. There are pictures of her on my website, so if people want to see what she looks like.
She's adorable. We saw her on your website.
So
cute.
Otherwise, I like to bake. I'm not very good at it, which is the only thing in my life that I'm not good at, and I enjoy it. So that's kind of cool.
We don't enjoy things we're not good at, right?
I like to work out. I guess I like to have had worked out. Kind of like right now. I don't like to do it, but I like having it done.
I like that.
It always feels better when you're done. I never want to go.
Right.
But I'm always glad I did.
Yeah, exactly.
Good point.
Awesome.
I wanted to ask you about, where he goes for treatment.
Oh.
What?
Before we leave the book.
Yes, before we leave the book. So when your character goes inpatient to this treatment center, and it's kind of based off of video gaming, like getting points and leveling up. Mm-hmm. I've read another book with a very similar thing. It's called Cure for the Uncommon Universe. It's by Christian McKay Nightiger. I believe I'm saying his last name right. Where it's a treatment center for addiction. Specifically, this character has a video game addiction. And so they go to this place and it's all leveling up and getting points. So it's working on that reward process of working up and doing it. Anyway, it was really interesting. I'd never heard of anything like that before. Are there real places like that? Is this based off of a treatment center that follows this? Or did you just come up with this idea to tie it into his love of the video game starvation?
Yeah, so the cool thing is a lot of inpatient facilities have levels or groups. So as you do the things that you need to do to recover, you get more and more privileges. So that could be day trips or you get to go home, things like that. So it's based off of real treatment in that they do have levels, which is cool that it does align in that way.
Yeah. I've never stayed in inpatient care, but I didn't know that it worked that way.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that it would be motivating, you know?
Right.
That was something that I thought was super interesting and would have loved to spend more time there. That was cool.
Yeah. I liked the idea of that treatment facility and earning points for what you're eating and what you're doing. So very cool.
Super cool. Okay. Have you always been a big reader, or is it more writing that you love?
I definitely was a big reader first. There was one summer where I read a book every day, like a 300-page book every day. Almost reading to the point where it's problematic. But
that's very cool.
I got into writing because, you know, after reading that many books, it kind of felt like I was reading the same book over and over. And I had trouble finding ones that I was super excited about. And mental health books, especially, there weren't that many out there. So that made me really excited to do that. And also when you write a book, it takes a year versus if you read a book and it takes a day.
A little longer term goal there.
Yeah. That's very cool. So what's your favorite genres? I mean, I know that you like to write mental health books, but is that the same with reading?
Yeah. My main genre that I read is young adult mental health fiction. I do read an occasional romance or beach read. Those are always fun. I used to be a big sci-fi fantasy person. And I, for some reason, don't find them as exciting as I used to. I don't know if like your taste buds change when you get older. I guess your taste
in fiction. I think you kind of go through phase. At least my experience is like I go through phases where mm-hmm. I'll read one genre a ton, and then I'm like, okay, I can't read one of those for a long time. Yeah,
definitely. I'm like on right a hiatus now, from World War II.
I was just going to say that very thing. I can't do a historical fiction. Please don't make me. But I used to read all that. Like I mean, I couldn't read enough. I thought it was so fascinating.
Yeah. So, and at different points in our life, it's different things with what's going on. So I agree. I really love a good young adult mental illness. I think there's, because that's a topic that's being brought to light so heavily right now, there's a lot of books coming out right now that deal with anxiety, suicide, depression, which I think is fantastic. And I love seeing it, especially where it's something that hits so close to home to me. And with my, I've got teenagers who struggle as well. And so someone that, you know, they're big readers. My boys are big readers. My daughter is as well. But specifically my boys who are struggling with this, it gives them something to be like, oh, it's not just me. Mm-hmm. And I think there's comfort in that, that they're not going through this alone or not the only one. So I love it. I love that you're in that genre and giving kids hope and someone to say, it's not just me. So kudos. Sure.
I think that's the most dangerous part of mental illness. And it feels alienating and you feel lonely. And that's when you get into people feeling suicidal, like nobody can relate to how they're feeling and nobody can make them feel better. And so I think that's why it's so important to have representation and to have people feel like there are other people going through this and it's not just me.
Right. Yep. So I thought your author's note was beautifully written. It gives a trigger warning. And is it okay if I read this here?
Yep.
It says trigger warning. This is at the beginning of the book. This book covers difficult topics such as eating disorders, suicide, and depression. This story is not meant to represent all eating disorder stories, nor everyone who experiences them. Further, I hope that I have not glorified these diseases in any way, nor vilified those who suffer from them. My goal is to bring awareness to an often ignored area, namely men who struggle with eating disorders and suicidality. Hopefully, this awareness will help decrease the stigma of mental illness and start much-needed conversations. If reading this book brings up difficult feelings, anxiety, despair, eating disorder symptoms, etc., please reach out to someone. I have included a few resources below that I hope are helpful. You matter, what you feel is valid, and just because you feel something like hopeless does not mean your situation is. And then you've listed some resources for help, some 1-800 numbers and different organizations that are helpful. I mean, it brings chills to me even now reading it. I think it's so important to, A, put a trigger warning out that this might bring up some feelings if you've struggled here, know someone who struggled, and also that we're not glorifying. I think that's a tricky subject. I work in middle schools and the suicide rate going up and up, people are afraid to talk about it because they think it, and it does. I mean, we don't want to glorify such a tragic thing. And with people struggling, we don't want to give that attention, but at the same time, we need to talk about it. And so I think that was beautifully written as we're going to talk about it and here's where to go if you need help. And we're not trying to glorify this. We're not trying to undermine it as well, but we need to talk about it. So well written, well done.
Thank you. Yeah. And I think that kind of leads into, I think a lot of people, when they talk about these things, suicide, eating disorders, things like that, they're scared to talk about them because they don't, it is a big, scary topic and you don't know how to support people.
Yeah.
And I would say my number one advice for people supporting others is that a lot of times it's better to try not to problem solve and just be there for somebody. So not just let them know that you're there and validate their feelings. So someone says, I'm really sad. I don't feel good. So instead of saying, how can I make you feel better? Can I make you ice cream? Say, I hear you. I hear that you're really sad. That's really difficult. And that can go such a long way. And just letting somebody know that you're there, you hear them and their feelings aren't something that need to be fixed.
Right. I think that's important too, because we're not the experts on fixing these problems, but we're support and we're absolutely love and caring. And that's,
anyone can do that.
Anyone can do that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So we have to ask you, because you are on our podcast, what's on your shelf right now?
I have a number of books right now. A couple are advanced reader copies from some of my author friends.
Oh, that's lucky.
Yeah. I have kind of a lighter read, The Hot Dog Girl by Jennifer Dugan. And that's kind of a fun, it's an LGBTQ contemporary book. Really well written. And another one is, it's a science fiction novel that I'm obviously friends with the author, otherwise. Another advanced reader copy of more of a mental health novel. So,
okay. So you like to like be the first one to know for everyone else. That's awesome. I don't have any comments on those because I've never heard of them yet. If you had a recommendation for us on what we should be reading, what would it be?
So as a, from a biased perspective, because she's one of my favorite authors, I think Laurie Halse Anderson is an awesome writer. So she's written Speak and Winter Girls. She was kind of one of the inspirations for my book in the way that she handles tough topics, like eating disorders, assault, things like that, in a really honest and raw way.
Laurie Halse Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've seen this cover like everywhere. Have you seen that before?
It sounded familiar when you said,
look how many, I mean, it's been reviewed on Goodreads almost 500,000 times.
Holy cow.
Like that's a lot. And it has a 4.02 rating. So this is one that you're like, you need to read this book.
Yeah. Okay. I think that those are, not only was she ahead of the trend of mental health fiction, but I think she is one of the best at it. And then in terms of, if you're not as much into mental health fiction, I mean, Karma's book is still one of my favorites. So if you haven't
read that,
gone back and listened to it, the podcast, you definitely should.
We're waiting for the second one.
I know. She said we're going to have to wait
a while.
We have
to wait a while. But yeah, that was, we really enjoyed that one.
Yeah,
too,
that was so fun. Fantastic. Awesome. I love that. So is there a book that you're like really, that might be coming out this year that you're really looking forward to reading?
I think I'm trying to get caught up on all the books.
Yes, we do. Sometimes finding time to read is the hardest thing to do.
Book in hand reader, or will you do an audiobook?
So I used to be a book in hand reader. Now, as I've gotten older, I realize the utility of an audiobook. So reading in the car, reading while I'm working out, doing chores, things like that has been awesome. I know in college I started reading while I was on the stationary bike, which was great. And also, side bonus, because of the endorphins when you're working out, you remember what you're reading better. So that's a fun fact.
I
didn't know that either.
Very interesting.
Yeah, if I'm not talking, if it doesn't require me to actually be engaged in something, I have an audiobook going.
Absolutely, I do.
Yeah, in the car, all those things. And so
I have like a book that I'm reading at night.
Yeah, but there's always
like
one on my nightstand.
Whether it's a ebook or a, you know, physical copy.
Paper copy.
Yeah. And then I always am listening to something throughout the day. But to sit down and read throughout the day feels impossible.
It's such a treat when I find I have time for it, though. It's a treat.
I will give you that.
Yeah.
I will give you that. So do you have a favorite author?
Probably Laurie Halse Anderson.
Gosh,
I also really like John Green's The Fault in Our Stars, but his other books are some of my least favorite. So I don't know if you could call him.
Interesting. I love A Fault in Our Stars.
Yeah. We both loved that one. Yeah.
So good.
That was a great one. I don't know. I'd have to look up to see if I've read any of his others, though. It doesn't stand out.
I don't think I've read any of his.
But I don't. I can't think of any.
I'm looking right now at the author profile of Laurie Halse Anderson because you love her so much. I need to know more about her. And she has written a lot of books. I didn't know. Like she's.
I'm excited. I
been a published author for quite some time. It looks like.
Oh, I. Back to John Green. I love Turtles All the Way Down. I did like that one.
Did you read it?
Yeah. And I did like Paper Towns. So I have read a couple others of his.
So what did you think of the Turtles All the Way Down? She's trying to be nice. Like,
no.
You can say.
It wasn't my favorite book. I have to say, I appreciate, you know, him trying to write a book and raise awareness of OCD. I know he has lived experience with that. For some reason, it really didn't resonate with me. I was not engaged with the plot or the character or pretty much anything.
That's interesting, because for me, the main character, specifically her OCD of picking at her fingernails, having that raw opening on her fingers, that's, I know someone that is the specific OCD that they deal with. And so it was very...
felt real.
It was real. It was representation on a different characteristic of OCD and anxiety. So
wait, did he write Looking for Alaska?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ew.
You didn't like that one.
No. Did you read that one?
No, I didn't read that one.
It's too much.
I love it when Sarah and I talk books and she's read something and I'd be like, I gave it 5 stars. And then she's like, oh, no.
Looking for Alaska. Like, it was like, how many awful things can I have teenagers do in one book and make it seem like that's totally normal?
Oh, funny.
That's how I felt about it. Okay. But it actually... If you looked at that, got very good reviews from most people. So I'm the minority here. I'm the minority. Maybe that's normally people's like schoolhood experiences. And I just had a weird one. I don't know.
I'm with you. It was not my favorite.
So you read that one too. Isn't that hard when you like love an author and then you're like, you know, it's hit or miss with their books.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
You never know.
Bummer.
Where can people find out more about you?
Yeah, so I have a website, Molly Fennig, FENNIG.com. And I also have a Twitter and a Facebook.
It's MollyFennig.com. Mm-hmm.
And I have a Twitter, I'm at Molly Fennig, Facebook, Molly Fennig Author. Also, I have a newsletter on my website, so part of my blog. We're doing some fun things for NIDA Week, which is at the end of February. So some giveaways, some promos, really help get the word out about the book, raise awareness during NIDA Week. So
tell us about NIDA Week.
Yeah. So NIDA is National Eating Disorder Awareness Week. And so it's really a week dedicated to raising awareness for eating disorders.
Awesome. That was so fun talking with you today. Thank you for taking the time to join us and talk about writing and publishing. That is amazing. Well done. You've published 2 books.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And you're so young. Gosh, makes me feel older.
Right.
Goodness. So accomplished. I think that's amazing. Hats
off
to you.
I'm always impressed when people have a drive to do something like writing a book.
That takes so much time. Yeah. I mean, to not give up and to stick with it. I think that's incredible. Well done.
Thank you.
And we are so grateful that you came and talked to us. Thanks to our listeners for listening, and we'll catch you next time. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Jamie.
And this is your book club.